inch, partly because I was braced against the desk, but also because I was quite literally twice her size. I wondered if she realized the right-hand wall of my office was made of glass, then remembered that she gave very little shit about who saw her naked. "You're a bastard. We grew up together. We're childhood sweethearts." If that's your only defense, it's lacking, because I can crush it to pieces by bringing up something you did a little over a year ago. I chuckled darkly. "Keep the ring. Cancel everything else. There will not be a wedding in August, Lily. It's over." And as I said that, I realized there was not even an ounce of me that was remorseful, not even for letting her keep my family's ring. It was tainted once she'd worn it anyway, or the missed opportunity for so-called world domination Kate was always teasing me about.
"I'm going to make your life a living hell, Celion."
Lily wiggled her finger in my face. I took her finger and lowered it, wrapping her dress back around her waist for her. "I dare you, sweetheart. It's been too long since I showed you who I really am. I cannot wait for you to get reacquainted with the asshole version everyone else has been privy to for the past year, partly because of you." I couldn't dump all the blame on Lily, though. My father had taken the worst dad of the century trophy, leaving others to eat dust.
"You're insane!"
she yelled in my face. That's rich, coming from a half-naked woman who just broke a monitor and accused a gay middle-aged woman of having an affair with her fake fiancé.
"You're weird, and a smartass. I don't even like you anymore."
She walked over to the door, made a U-turn, stared at me helplessly, and shook her head.
"Tell me how to make it right, and I will."
Her voice cracked around her plea. "Get out!" The door slammed in my face, and my eyes immediately traveled to the newsroom through the glass walls. Judith was staring at me, like she wanted my eyes to bleed out the truth of what had happened in my office. But I couldn't invite her in, not so soon after kicking Lily out. That would be transparent, downright risky. I dialed Brianna's extension and asked her to summon Judith for a one-on-one rundown meeting in 3 hours. I asked her to do the same for Kate, Elijah, and James. I had nothing to say to the last three. I just didn't want it to look suspicious. I fell into my seat and closed my eyes. A text message dinged on my phone and I flipped it over to see who it was.
"Dan, your father is at a meeting right now selling ad space to a Vegas-based marketing company that specializes in condoms, tobacco, gambling equipment, and sex toys. I'm sitting in the same restaurant, they're talking seven figures."
This deal would be suicide for the LBC brand, and my father knew it. This was a prime example of how far he'd go to sabotage things for me. "Record everything, please," I ordered. It was time to take this matter to the board and bury what was left of my relationship with the man who hated me just a little less than I hated him. Three meaningless conversations later, Kate was happy to know I'd called the engagement off with Lily, Elijah and I talked baseball, and James tried to give me some fatherly advice about women and relationships, only to be sent out with his tail between his legs. Judith entered my office. The minute she walked in, the urge to push her against the door, spread her legs, and fuck her relentlessly burned through my veins, but I settled for an easy smirk.
"Humphrey?"
"Sir?"
I was seated behind my desk, something my erection was very grateful for, and I motioned for her to take a seat across from me. She did so obediently, her back straight. I handed her the notebook I'd managed to retrieve from Lily. It was wrinkled as fuck. Jude took it in shaky hands.
"Thank you,"
she said quietly. "I'll buy you another one."
"I don't want another one. I like this one."
Fuck, why did that make me even harder? She shook her head, sighing.
"You wanted to see me?"
"There are a few matters we need to discuss as a result of the unexpected appearance of Miss Davis at the newsroom." I loosened my tie. Jude smiled her sweet, innocent smile.
"That's a lovely way of describing a batshit crazy woman who broke a monitor and ruined my notebook, if I ever heard one."
I smirked, sat back, knotted my fingers together. I sent Brianna to the third floor to get one of James's stylists to iron Kipling back into shape. Her eyes widened, her lower lip poking out.
"How did you..."
"Figured it out." I waved her off. "Not quite." The mystery had occupied my mind for many long nights, so much so that I'd pieced together every encounter in which she'd mentioned Kipling. She'd had the notebook clutched in her palm in all of them. Jude looked touched, and I needed her not to be, so I continued. "At any rate, Miss Davis will be in no position to further damage property or harass LBC employees anymore, especially seeing as I terminated our engagement." Which was a really nice way of saying we could go back to fucking peacefully without Judith giving me the third degree. Just not in so many words.
"Is that why I'm here?" she asked, jutting her chin out. Because you think I'll jump back into your bed?
And couch, and office door, and fucking public toilet if I say so. I shrugged, sitting back and smirking at her.
You're wrong, Celion. When I told you I don't do love, I meant it. But I don't do casual either. I need it to mean something. I was with Milton because I'm capable of having a relationship. I'm capable of giving.
I really didn't want to hear about that douche Milton. At the same time, my growing need to fuck Judith might very well make my balls explode. I decided I would compromise my truth, if not bend it just a little, to accommodate her needs. I can do a discreet arrangement.
I don't want an arrangement. I want a relationship.
Whatever you want to call it, Chucks. As long as you realize there is nothing at the end of that tunnel. No marriage, no wedding, no kids, and no cozy evenings watching Jeopardy with your dad. You can have it. Now pack a bag, we're going to Miami for the weekend. I thought about all I'd said and decided to amend one thing. Actually, maybe Jeopardy is okay sometimes. Your pussy will need an occasional rest.
Miami?
Her eyes widened like I'd suggested Afghanistan. She recovered quickly, clearing her throat and adding,
We haven't finished working on the Syria piece.
Right, fuck. Of course, we still needed to wrap it up. We'll work into the night.
I promised Dad I would watch the Yankees game with him.
She reddened. I hated that I liked that about her. Her fierce loyalty to her family. No matter how late she stayed at work, she somehow always made time for her pops. But maybe Jude wasn't anything special. Maybe I just had no idea how a normal family worked and I was giving her extra credit. You may have the night off, I said curtly. I'll send a cab to take you to the airport. Anything else? She stared at me for a few seconds, still blinking in disbelief. I guess I'd expected her to be happier about the news, but I didn't exactly deliver it with flowers and sugary promises.
You're single?
She confirmed. I raked my eyes over her. Seems that way.
You broke it off with her?
She rubbed her forehead, looking around the room. Why? Was she expecting this to be a big prank? Clearly she thought very little of me in the morals department. Do you need this in writing, Humphrey?
That would be great, actually.
I smirked. Get your smart ass out of my office before I spank it.
You're awful, she said,
getting up from her seat and walking back to the door. I watched her every movement, wondering why I found her so fascinating, and inwardly asking myself what the fuck I was doing, taking this random chick to see my mother, Maman, who was still blissfully ignorant of the collapse of my engagement. You like awful, I retorted. She stopped by the door, bowed her head, and shook it, laughing. When she left, the smell of hope crawled into my nostrils, the smell of her vanilla shampoo and gingery, spicy perfume, and I had to admit, I liked it a whole lot better.
Chapter 15. Jude. Just smile and act normal. Dad sat at my side, wearing an S. Carter jersey and a Yankees ball cap, and drinking soda, which was definitely not on his current menu. I let it slide because he looked completely enchanted with the game. I myself wore a huge American flag hat and a Frank Sinatra shirt. Close enough, if you ask me. I broached the subject when I got back from refilling our bowl of popcorn in the kitchen. Another thing Dad shouldn't be eating. But a little couldn't hurt. Would you mind if I took off this weekend? I tried to sound casual through the lump of guilt forming in my throat. My palms were so sweaty, the popcorn bowl nearly slipped between them. I was going to lie to Dad yet again, and for what? Why did I keep the truth from my father, the closest person to me? I wasn't doing anything wrong. Then again, he was still so fragile and was only now getting back on his feet, literally and figuratively. He was feeling physically better, and between spending time with Mrs. Hawthorne and seeing me thrive at my new job, he was emotionally better, too. But I still didn't want him to know I'd broken up with Milton. That could set Dad back. And if his health took a wrong turn, I'd never forgive myself. Honey, he patted my knee as I sat down, his hand immediately sliding to the bowl of popcorn. I think it's a great idea. You deserve some time off. Mill taking you anywhere fancy? He smiled. You're going to hell for this, Jesus said inside my head. And if you think I'll claim your ass when you get there, you obviously weren't paying attention in Bible class. I decided I would, in fact, tell my father I'd broken up with Milton after I got back from Florida. I could even tell him about Celion, as the two seemed to be in contact. I wasn't sure how much they had in common, but part of the reason I didn't despise Celion, though it was tempting, was because I knew he had a soft side. I'd seen it when he helped my father. I saw it when he tried to save me. I don't know, I dodged the question. We'll see. You know I'll be available on my phone, right?
Yes, he laughed, shuttling more popcorn to his mouth. You've mentioned so 1 or 2 million times before. Plus, if I need anything, Mrs. Hawthorne is just upstairs.
I eyed him curiously, smiling. When do I finally get to meet her in the capacity of being her boyfriend's daughter? My father looked down and wiggled his toes inside his slippers. That's the first time I'd noticed he was wearing a new pair. Actually, his whole ensemble was new. Still the same gray sweatpants and white t-shirt, but they were ironed and looked good on him. He'd also shaved whatever was left of his hair to create a more unified look. I didn't know why I found it so heartbreakingly joyful to see him happy about another woman. Maybe I shouldn't have, but he did look kind of good, like a browless Bruce Willis.
Does he make your heart sing, Jojo?
What? I pretended to laugh, and failed. Oh, God.
Does Milton make your heart sing? Music is such an important part of your life, and when you're happy, I can see it. Your steps have a rhythm. When you talk, you swing. Are you in love with him? Because if you're not, it's not worth it.
I looked the other way, pretending to clean invisible lint off of a decorative pillow on the couch. I can't fall in love, Dad. I tried.
That's a load of bull.
It's true. Mom told me so. She said my heart was a lonely hunter, that it would never find someone else to beat next to. And she was right. It didn't. I didn't tell him the whole truth, that I believed her, that I guarded my heart like it wasn't for the taking. That I probably could have moved in with Milton if I'd wanted to, but I'd never really wanted to. I didn't want to tell Dad that this one simple sentence had changed my world more than I was willing to accept, and that I was terrified. My heart was losing its claws, its weapons, its hunger for blood, in the battle against Celion. Dad's eyes crinkled, and I was so focused on the confusion and awe in them, it didn't even register that he was laughing. Not just laughing, hooting, holding his stomach and everything.
No, Jojo, no. She didn't mean your heart is a lonely hunter. She meant the book, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter by Carson McCullers. It was her favorite. The author was 23 when she wrote it. Your age.
He looked at me pointedly, like this too added meaning.
Mick Kelly was your mother's favorite heroine. She was a tomboy who was really fond of music. You should read it. We have it somewhere here.
He rose to his feet with a groan and made his way to his room. I sat, dumbfounded, feeling irrationally furious at both him and my mother for allowing me to look at life through the thick, dirty lens of a person who'd never believed she could experience love. The game was still playing, with the Yankees dominating the Astros, and that's how I knew Dad really was serious about me reading this book. He came back, blowing the dust off the cover, and handed it to me.
If you travel at all on your way to this little vacation, make sure you read it. Your mother believed in love, very much so. She believed in fate, too. That's why you grew up to be the heroine she always admired.
I smiled and thanked him, and I didn't wait for tomorrow. I devoured the whole thing in one night, every single page, A to Z. Then I read bits of it again as I packed my summer clothes and dragged my suitcase down our narrow stairway in the morning, waiting for the cab. My heart was not lonely. It was desperate and beating and alive. It frightened and delighted me at the same time, knowing that I could, and I would, and I should fall in love, whether it was with my boss or otherwise. And when the alarm started singing, I slid into the right chucks and wiggled my toes inside them, knowing he was going to notice. They were yellow. Hope. I'd only been on a plane 2 times prior to my trip to Florida with Celion. One had taken us to California when I was 6. Mom's sister got married, but she had since decided to divorce, then migrate to Australia. She sent a postcard when Mom died, but didn't bother to keep in touch. The second time was for a spontaneous vacation in New Orleans. That had happened when I was 14. Dad had been trying his best to act like everything was fine after Mom died. He dyed his hair at home to forget he had any silver strands, took cooking classes, and decided we should live in the moment. New Orleans was great. Us living off mac and cheese for 2 consecutive months afterward because we'd spent too much was not. I'd assumed I was likely to get on a plane again sometime soon. I'd imagined Milton would plan something nice for our honeymoon if we ever got married. Business class, however, was something I'd never imagined. Yet here I was, clutching my tattered copy of The Heart is a Lonely Hunter with a glass of champagne by my side, wondering where on earth Celion was. We had 5 more minutes before the plane took off. He stumbled through the door right before they locked it, wearing the same clothes as yesterday and nursing a cup of Starbucks. His leather Armani duffel bag hung lazily from the tips of his fingers, and the minute he saw me, his tired face cracked into a dangerous smile. I licked my lips, looking down and pressing my thighs together. What the hell was wrong with me, ever since I'd learned the truth about what Mom had told me, thinking of Celion was weird? It felt like we were no longer rivals, like he had the upper hand. Which was ridiculous, because he always had. I'd simply refused to accept it. Celion shoved his bag into the overhead bin and thanked the air hostess for hysterically offering to do so herself. He then slid into the seat next to me. He smelled of alcohol, coffee, and hope. I wiggled my toes inside my yellow chucks. Came straight from work? Instead of answering my question, he cupped the back of my neck and erased the distance between us by sealing my mouth with a hot, demanding kiss. I groaned against his lips. When we disconnected, his eyes were half-lidded and drunk, and I assumed mine were, too. "That's very relationshipy," I mumbled, staring at his lips. "Did I get all the information right?" Celion plucked a red marker from the book sitting in my lap, uncapped it, and wrote A+ on the back of my hand. Then he kissed the inside of it, like Phoenix had done to me, and like I'd done to him. I swooned inside. "Here's to many more revelations, and to saving the world, one item at a time." He took my glass from my side table, tipped it back, and then smashed his lips into mine again, this time letting me taste the alcohol in his mouth. The plane had begun to take off when he looked more closely at the book in my lap. He grabbed it, examining it from all angles.
"Is it good?"
he asked. "The best," I said, resting my hand on the cover. He put his hand on mine. My heart smiled at that, and all I could think was, "Please don't hurt us."
Chapter 16 Celion. Shortly after takeoff, I sent Maman a heads up of what was to come. Diplomatic it was not, but if she was looking for direct and honest, she certainly received it, and in spades. Celion, hopping on a plane to discuss Matias with you, who, by the way, fucked my fiancé over a year ago. Consequently, I no longer have a fiancé, but I am bringing over a woman, so keep your claws tucked in. P.S. Brianna booked a conference call with the entire board later this afternoon, and that includes your philandering ex-husband. I sent you some recordings you need to listen to, so please do that in between auditioning new boy toys. P.P.S. I meant it about the claws. I am planning on keeping this one for a while. After we landed, if Judith was surprised to find we were sharing a Mandarin hotel suite, she didn't let it show. She dove headfirst onto the huge bed, making a snow angel on the sheets. I didn't know why that made me want to fuck her so hard I'd nail her to the mattress. I only knew that scraping her off of it was going to be a bitch, so I opted for jumping in the shower. Seeing as I'd been working for 36 hours straight so we could take this trip, and probably smelled like something had died inside of me, which wasn't far off. We still hadn't discussed my engagement breakdown properly. I didn't think it was worth mentioning. We were both available now. I could fuck Judith Raw against James Townley's green screen with zero consequences, other than having to replace the screen, which was something we were already planning on.
Everyone at work was already privy to the fact that Lily had gotten the boot after her little performance, including, by definition, Ava and Gary Graham Grant, whatever his name was. When I left the bathroom, Jude was out on the balcony, her elbows on the white banister overlooking the ocean. Her ass, clad in those ripped black jeans, swayed from side to side as she stood on one foot. I was still wrapped in a towel when I approached her, clasping her midriff from behind and grinding my erection into her ass. Spent some overtime to cover for your ass. I bit her earlobe, feeling her body break into chills beneath my touch.
"Looks like you're still covering my ass,"
she sassed, wiggling her round butt so my cock was now between her cheeks through her jeans and my towel. My hand slid down, undoing the button of her jeans and sliding the zipper down. "Bend over and hold onto the banister, Chucks. Gonna get a little rocky." I licked my lips, sliding down her jeans and underwear in one go and dropping the towel. I wasn't much of an exhibitionist, which was why I'd also rented the rooms on either side of us. But of course I wasn't going to let her be privy to my level of crazy. What can I say? Having the option to fuck Judith Humphrey everywhere in the room and outside of it took first priority. And I wasn't much of a hedonist, but booking an entire floor was a luxury I'd chosen to take this weekend. I spread her ass cheeks and slapped her outer thigh lazily as I guided my cock into her already dripping pussy. I wanted to go slow and steady this time. The last thing I needed was her tipping over the edge. Literally, not figuratively.
"Oh, Celian."
My name on her lips was a prayer. "Yes?" I asked, thrusting a little harder, bending her down so her upper body was level with my cock and placing a hand over her lower back.
"I missed this,"
she whimpered. "I missed you," but of course she couldn't milk those words out of me if my life depended on it. I slapped her ass instead. "Didn't peg you for a filthy girl, Chucks. Yet here you are, fucking in front of him."
"In front of who?"
A trace of panic touched her voice, and I laughed, gripping her head and fucking her a little harder. "Kipling," I hissed, glancing at her notebook lying on the bed behind us, next to her book. Yesterday, after Lily had unleashed her crazy in my newsroom, I'd caught Jude writing around the deep hole my ex had created in her notebook, and I'd suppressed the urge to rush out and bite down on her lower lip in front of everyone. Jude's loyalty, even to objects, mesmerized me.
"Jesus,"
she moaned as I thrust deeper into her.
"You're such a jerk."
"So I've been told a million times, half of them by you." I dipped my hand between her legs and rubbed her slit, licking her neck and jaw and the inside of her ear. I didn't want to admit that fucking Judith felt different, that I was doing things with her I didn't usually do with my one-night stands. I wasn't a thoughtful lover. I wasn't necessarily against eating pussy if it looked delicious, but putting my mouth on a crack meant I was really crazy for a girl, and licking and sucking her every body part while fucking her, that was a first. I didn't even remember prepping Lily like that. I felt Judith tighten and spasm around me, and then she came all over my cock, her ass shuddering against my groin. I wanted to come as hard as she had, so I grabbed her by the hair and turned her around, plastering her against the glass of the balcony door. "Safety first," I groaned as I drove mercilessly into her. My balls tightened and I pulled out, milking my cum all over her lower back. That was more like it. A fuck, not lovemaking. I gave her ass one last slap and walked into the room, leaving the towel on the floor. "I'm ordering room service. Clean up and let me know what you want because your pussy is about to be my starter." "We never ate the lobster I ordered," Jude said eating a room-serviced lunch was clinical and sad, that vacation meals equaled dodgy street food from questionable trucks and 7-Eleven candy bars you didn't know existed. She was begging for food poisoning, but I couldn't deny her, and that was a problem I was beginning to recognize. There was something free and unhinged in the way she viewed life. Her lack of materialistic greed both stunned and ate at me. So we went for a walk on the beach and ate Cuban sandwiches and drank iced tea on the promenade. The food was greasier than Elijah's hair, yet oddly satisfying. Judith then asked if I knew how to skip stones across the water. I told her there were not many things I couldn't do and meant it. I didn't mention that our servant had taught me how to do that during summer vacations at our chateau in Saint-Jean-Cap-de-Ferrat. I wasn't normally ashamed of my elite upbringing, but for reasons unknown, decided to keep this to myself. She asked me to teach her. I did. "Flat round stones are best, and you want to go fast." I wrapped her fingers around a little stone I'd found.
She held it in her hand with a smile similar to the one Lily had flashed me when I gave her the engagement ring. Both were stones. Only one was worth more than a fleet of Bentleys. Yet Jude only cared about the important stuff, which reminded me to look down at her feet. Yellow? I asked. She grinned impishly.
Figure it out.
We took a walk, and I didn't hold her hand, and I didn't kiss her, and I didn't fucking breathe, because I didn't trust myself not to do any of those things if I looked her way. I was torn between liking how it felt to spend time with her and hating how she made me want things I'd never cared about.
How's your relationship with your mom?
She asked. We're officially in family territory.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
It's okay. Why?
I sometimes wonder what it feels like to have a mother.
I raised an eyebrow. I loved my mom, but I couldn't commit to saying we had a great relationship. For one thing, we were business partners, and I knew she'd run me over for the right price. Still, she was better than my father, not that it said a whole lot. Depends on the mother. I have a feeling your father is better than both of my parents combined, so I wouldn't worry, I mumbled.
My ill father, she added.
Not for long. The secondary growths are shrinking, and he's responding very well to the treatments.
And how do you know that?
She stopped walking, her entire body pointing at me like an arrow. I shrugged. I visit him every Sunday when you go to the library. It wasn't a big deal. We were both Yankee fans, and it wasn't like I had anything else to do. My career was my life, which meant that on Sundays, I had no life. My soft spot for Robert had nothing to do with Judith, and I certainly didn't want her to think I was expecting anything in return. Plus, I didn't want her to get the wrong idea about a relationship. Rob was still certain she was with Milton, so my money was on her, not really counting on our fuck buddy's status to last past this season.
I can't believe you didn't tell me.
She smiled, but she didn't look surprised. I always arrived a few minutes early. I tried to tell myself it was because I didn't want Jude to bump into me on her way to the train. But in practice, I liked to stop at the Polish deli and watch her through the window as she walked to the station with her headphones deep in her ears. I always wondered what she was listening to. Yeah, well, I resumed our walk. She followed, jogging behind me.
You can't just walk away from this conversation. You've been visiting my dad and taking care of him and you haven't even told me.
She panted. I liked her little pants. I wanted them against my palm as I fucked her somewhere public, where no one could hear. Watch me do exactly that. Walk away from this conversation.
Celion, why?
Why am I walking? Because I can. Because I have legs. Why am I walking away from this conversation? Because it's pointless, and it doesn't mean what you think it means. I stopped again, this time in front of an old record store with signs in Spanish covering its display window. I wasn't even sure if it was open, but I wanted us to stop talking because I wasn't ready. Calling it a relationship was one thing. Acting like we were a couple was another. I pushed the door. I walked in and she slipped in after me. The place was dark with only vinyl records in sight. A man who looked like Meatloaf, the singer, not the dish, was snoring behind the counter, dribbling into a copy of NME. Judith immediately shut up and started browsing. Nice save, asshole. Getting her into a record shop was like giving a baby a pacifier. Only hotter because I still remembered her playlist and had imagined fucking her to it countless times while we were close to killing each other in the office.
Did you know Barry Manilow didn't write his song, I Write the Songs?
She slid said singer's record out of a batch, grinning at me. I didn't. I liked that I didn't. My general knowledge was usually superior to everyone else in my vicinity. Came with the territory of making news and having to know everything about anything. But Jude was just as hungry for information as I was, which made her even more attractive, not to mention lethal. Did you know Jingle Bells was originally written for Thanksgiving? I countered.
Impossible.
She made a shocked face, her jaw slacking. I laughed. She poked me with the tip of a record she held.
The British Navy uses Britney Spears songs to scare off Somali pirates, I shit you not.
We were playing like this now? The piano Freddie Mercury plays in Bohemian Rhapsody is the same one Paul McCartney plays in Hey Jude, I countered, leaning into her face and flicking her little nose. Hey Jude. Was I flirting? I was. But why? It didn't make any sense. She was already mine in all the ways that mattered. She was in my bed. I'd shoved my fingers in every single hole in her body. Why was I doing this? She walked across the aisle, her shoulder brushing my arm, and dropped the record back in its place, picking another one instead. I didn't see what it was and decided I didn't care.
Queen and Jimi Hendrix never won a Grammy. Justin Bieber did,
she whispered, her grin signaling that she had won the battle. I didn't give you your iPod back because I wanted to keep a piece of you with me, I admitted. And won. And lost. And what the fuck?
What?
Her smile wiped off so quickly you'd think I'd told her I'd been giving her father placebo drugs for the past few weeks. I picked up the record she was holding and walked over to the register to pay for it. Judith Humphrey didn't want me to buy her nice things, but that didn't stop me from wanting to, because the truth was I'd never been taught how to show affection. I was taught how to buy it. The salesman didn't even wake up as I slid a note across his counter, plucked a plastic bag, and put the record inside. Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys. Underrated. Romantic. Different. Jude. I'd never introduced a woman to my parents. Lily Davis had attended the same country club, same schools, and had a summer house right next to ours in Nantucket. They'd known her since she was a baby. Maman's best friend was her godmother, and we were both expected by our families to make it work since they could see the potential revenue of such a union. Fuck helicopter parents. Matthias and Iris Laurent were private jet parents. They'd wanted me to marry Newsflash Corp's princess, Lily Davis, before I'd found out my dick was good for more than pissing. I wasn't nervous. There was nothing to be nervous about. As far as Judith was concerned, she wasn't going to be assessed or judged. I'd told her my mother was under the impression that she'd come here to assist me with my professional duties. My mother lived in a penthouse, of course. Rich people loved putting distance between themselves and grounded people. Golden marbled and palm-treed, the skyscraper did nothing for Judith, who was busy taking a picture of a colorful reptile with her new phone. We were ushered in by an entourage of staff the minute we arrived at the lobby. Judith wore a modest black dress and plain black chucks, with her hair tied back. I was in my slacks and a casual shirt. Maman would rather see me in a strap-on and ball gag than casual wear, which naturally added a dash of sadistic pleasure to my state of underdress. In the elevator, why did everything happen in the fucking elevator? Jude turned to me and said,
if she starts talking to you about Lily, I'm leaving the room.
Hate to interrupt your guilt fest, but you weren't the reason I called off my engagement.
I know, but still.
Still, you have more morals in your pinky than Lily has in her entire body. Maman was sitting on her throne, a cream-upholstered David Michael sofa still adorned with the dangling 10K price tag atop her Persian carpet. The lingering tag was a horrendous mistake, I assumed, but not one I wanted to correct, seeing as she deserved the embarrassment of having her friends judge her for it silently. My mother was beautiful in a superficial way, the same way I'd imagined Lily would be in about 20 years. Everything was too groomed and too tight, leathery skin on newly bleached hair. I couldn't fault her for wanting to look younger. My father treated his women like he owned a car dealership. A newer, shinier model rolled in every few years. Maman's hair was blow-dried to perfection, and she wore a satin gown in silver.
My beautiful son,
she purred, not bothering to get up from the couch. I sauntered over to her, placing a kiss on each of her cheeks. Jude stood behind me and offered a little wave. I gestured to my companion. This is Judith Humphrey. There was no point in calling her my employee because she was much more than that. Or my girlfriend, because I wasn't sure if she was. Maman's lips curved into a secretive smile and she hooked her forefinger in the air, motioning for Jude to come closer.
I don't bite, my dear. But your son does.
I heard Judith mumbling under her breath as she made her way past me. She shook my mother's hand. A few minutes later, the housekeeper presented us with pistachio shortbread cookies and coffee and we all sat down. Instead of fucking around, I decided to broach the subject I'd come here for. Have you listened to the recordings, Maman?
I have. How did you get them?
Irrelevant. Point is, Matthias is trying to kill LBC by selling ad space to questionable parties and cutting my budget, even though we're making clean profits. In other words, he is trying to weaken our product while injecting harmful commercial content into the channel.
Sounds like something my ex-husband would do.
Iris Laurent was the sole heiress of LBC News Channel. An American-born royal with French roots, she fell in love with my father on the shore of Saint-Jean-Cap-de-Ferrat, France, under the swooshing trees and the influence of expensive champagne. He'd been a nobody trying to be somebody, a French punk with a thick accent and nothing but a bag of dreams and a lot of charm. A year later, they were already married and pregnant with me. Matthias knew a thing or two about social climbing, but my mother still held most of the power in LBC.
Not enough to overthrow him, but enough to keep him on his toes. I powered up my laptop, connecting it to the huge flat screen in front of us.
Give me the skinny on things.
Maman alternated between puffing on a cigarette and sucking on a shortbread cookie without eating it. God forbid. Ratings are still strong for our main show, but we're flailing in other time slots. The morning show is a train wreck, and the political talk show is losing steam by the nanosecond, due to the fact that Matias hired someone who cannot string two sentences without offending entire nations.
Your father has 5 more years in him if he's lucky.
Maman's voice was sweet with satisfaction.
Can you not wait it out?
At this rate, the network will be dead in 5 months.
Well, it is quite unfortunate, then, that you broke off your engagement with Lily. The Davis family holds 10% of the shares in LBC, and they and I would have made a majority. That's why I pushed you into dating her when you were kids. I predicted this would happen with your father.
And I would have appreciated your endorsement of the Davis girl had she not opened her legs to your ex-husband. Now let's focus on getting the board to see how dangerous Matias's game is. I hit the conference call button. Jude sat beside us, away from the webcam, and stared at us curiously, Kipling in her lap. My mother scowled, placing the thoroughly sucked cookie back in its plate. The conference call was my idea of hell. My father looked smug in a Hawaiian shirt sitting on a yacht, hopefully somewhere with Sudanese pirates, his curly white chest hair peeking out of his collar, a cigar between his teeth, and a giggling woman in his lap. Maman kept her mouth pursed as he coughed out the details of the string of deals he wanted to sign, laying out all the millions the network was going to make. The rest of the board ate it up the minute they heard the magic word revenue.
LBC is a business like any other. It's not a non-profit organization.
Bigwig won.
And the fact that the main show is performing just as well despite the cut in staff means the extra employees weren't necessary.
Bigwig too.
No, it means that my remaining employees are breaking their backs to maintain the level of accuracy and quality our viewers are used to, so you can treat your third wives to a new set of tits.
I stated matter-of-factly, pushing my hands into my pockets so I wouldn't punch the screen.
My son is quite the romantic,
my father snorted around his cigar.
He's a fine newsman and a very bad businessman. Just look at his recent choices. Did you know he recently broke off his engagement to the beautiful Lily Davis, heiress to Newsflash Corp, because he fell in love with a junior reporter? From Brooklyn, no less.
Now I pierced through the fabric of my pockets and tore my slacks. Fuck if I knew how he'd gained this information, but my top guess was it had come from Lily herself. I didn't know where she'd gotten this information, but I was certain we had a mole because the chances of Judith opening her mouth and talking about us to anyone who wasn't Ava and Gary were non-existent. A quick glance at her face confirmed she was team hashtag Mame Matias. She paled like the moon, standing up and excusing herself from the room. My mother refocused her attention on the screen.
You're being absurd, Matias.
Her red lipsticked mouth puckered.
Am I, my darling Iris? I married you and took half of what you have,
he laughed evilly.
Clearly absurd is not the word you're looking for.
May I suggest harsh?
If suggestions were your strong suit, you wouldn't be held by the balls by your son.
I rolled up my sleeves, getting tired of his little charade. Maman reddened quietly next to me. The last thing you want is for me to really go after you, father dearest. As for the deals, they're going to ruin our reputation and bulldoze over all the hard work we've done. We might as well publicly endorse kids drinking and teens catching STDs. By the time LBC dies, you won't be in charge anymore, and I'll be the one expected to provide the answers.
Matias fingered an invisible goatee, pretending to mull over my last statement. What do you say, fellas? You're the bigwigs? My son, on top of being a romantic, also hates money. Should we or should we not take the deals?
My mother waved her manicured hand.
I think we should pass on the deals and add more interns to the newsroom to maintain the current ratings.
I'm with Matias on this one, Iris. My apologies.
Bigwig won.
Me too.
Bigwig two.
Me three.
Bigwig three. I slapped the laptop shut before my mother could answer, then threw it across the room. It crashed against the wall, fell to the floor, and broke in half. My mother sat back in her cushioned couch, her chin wrinkled, like she was about to cry.
Don't say anything, I warned.
If you want to fix this, you need to talk to Lily.
Fuck you, Maman. She reached for another cigarette, blowing the smoke to the side. I stood up and paced,
running my fingers through my hair.
Swallow your pride, take her back. Judith is a nice girl, but there will be a lot of Judiths walking in and out of your life. There's only one Lily who can save you. Protect your mother's network.
My mother's network? I spat, laughing incredulously. Where the fuck have you been for the last decade, Maman? Even before you moved to Florida, you didn't give two shits about LBC. You only attended board meetings, and even that was half-heartedly and solely for the chance of screwing Dad over somehow. You could have managed it yourself, but you chose to give it to some incompetent asshole because working is not your jam. I spend 10 hours a day in the newsroom. I live it. I breathe it. I eat it. But when I make one decision that has nothing to do with it, it's suddenly an issue. This network is not yours more than it is mine. Just because Lily was born into the right family doesn't mean she's right for me. And that bullshit where you marry someone without standing up to their fucking face? I had a front row seat to that scenario at home, and I'm sure I'm not spoiling it for you when I say it ended badly. One last thing, Judith is not, in fact, disposable.
I noted. But I know a few people who are.
Now it was my mother's turn to stand up and throw her hands in the air.
All we ever wanted is for you and your sister to be happy. Don't give me this holier-than-thou attitude. If I may recall, you're not innocent either.
I kicked her precious sofa's frame. The price tag fell, and I took sick pleasure in how symbolic that felt.
Yeah, you made us very fucking happy, especially the part where Dad sent Camille's boyfriend to a goddamn war zone to keep him away from her because his blood wasn't blue enough, then proceeded to fuck my girlfriend. All while you were standing on the sidelines doing what, exactly? Finding more hot young ass my age? Really, you two should host a talk show on how to raise kids. Or, you know, on how to kill them.
She blinked at me, cupping her mouth with the hand that held the cigarette.
I thought you were the one who sent Phoenix away.
I turned around, glaring at her.
Huh?
She rubbed the side of her forehead, looking around for an imaginary person to explain everything to her. Tears gathered in the corners of her eyes. Lost. She looked lost.
When I asked Matthias what happened, he said you sent Phoenix to Syria, and that he would never forgive himself for letting you get away with it. I was mad, Celian. So mad. I divorced him solely for not standing his ground, but I couldn't divorce you. You're my baby. I tried so very hard not to hold it against you. I love you. So much. I always will. But I didn't know why you needed to interfere with Camille's life like that. You and Camille, you were different. I called you Celian because you were like the moon to me. You shone bright in the darkest time of my life. I gave Camille her name because she was virginal, unblemished. She was always so different from us. A free spirit. She loved who she loved and didn't care about the consequences. That's what made her different.
No, I wanted to correct. That's what made her good. Camille had been happier than the rest of us. Her smile had been contagious. I'd used to tug at her braids and call her Sunshine because her face was round and full of cheeks and always bright. Because I was the moon. I shook my head. He lied. He's always lied. Why would you ever believe him? Only reason I let him do that was because I figured if I could play house with Lily Davis, she could find another charming fuckboy to piss her daddy off. When I realized she was miserable and told her the truth, she ran into the street.
I thought she was mad at you.
No, she was mad at Matthias.
Then why do you always think it was your fault?
She plopped on the sofa, holding her head in her hands.
Because I should have told her somewhere else. Because I should have fought Matthias. Because I fucking failed her.
There was a coffee table and an ocean between us, and I realized I hadn't given Jude the entire truth when she'd asked about my relationship with my mother. In all honesty, I had no relationship to speak of with either of my parents. Truth was, I no longer had a sister or a fiancé. I was no less lonely than she was.
You never loved Lily.
My mother's voice softened, and her eyes followed suit. I shook my head. A year ago I'd cared for her, in some fucked up way. But to say I didn't love her now was like saying I disliked eating shit-smeared rocks. A real under-fucking statement. Mama nodded.
Can you save LBC?
Not at the price of being unhappy for the rest of my life. I tilted my chin up. All the fucked up mannerisms of a heartless prick had been picked up at home anyway, so she could hardly blame me for them. Heart attacks at 50, nameless girls in bikinis every weekend, an ex-wife who would love to see me in a casket. Yeah, no thank you. I didn't want my father's life. I'd take shitty pasta and a Yankee game in a two-bedroom Brooklyn apartment every day of the week over life in a lonely $16 million penthouse. However, watching my family's business die was going to make me unhappy. I was headed straight into misery no matter which path I chose. Maman stood up, walked cautiously toward me, stood on her tiptoes and kissed my cheek, her lips halting at my ear.
"You're nothing like Matthias,"
she whispered.
"I promise you."
No shit.
Chapter 17. Jude. I dragged my suitcase up the stairs to my apartment, letting out a feral groan. Why had I packed my entire room before I left for Florida? Oh, that's right, because I'd wanted to dazzle my emotionally stunted boss by showing off my alluring wardrobe, consisting of 80-year-old librarian's conservative dresses and an unhealthy amount of chucks. Celian had offered to help me with the suitcase, but I'd politely declined. And I guess he was relieved. He knew Dad still thought I was with Milton. As much as my dad liked him, he would punch both of us in our reproductive organs if he thought I was two-timing my long-term boyfriend. Our Floridian getaway had taken a sour turn after we'd left his mother's place. The stone-skipping and record-shopping was replaced by the usual dark fuckathon in which we were lost in a tornado of feelings and numbness. We'd walked the main street in heavy silence before Celian had dragged me into a Cuban dance club. We'd watched other people dance and grind into one another while we drank tequila. "Your father seems to think you fell in love with me," I'd tried to laugh it off. He'd pressed his thumb to my lower lip and pushed it down, licking the inside of it.
"My father thinks women should stay in the kitchen and global warming is a hoax. Let's try not to take him too seriously."
"Celian,
I don't hate you, Judith," he'd said, "and that's more than I can say about the rest of the world right now."
We'd stumbled back to our hotel suite and had enough sex to repopulate an entire continent, if that was how sex worked. It was angry and sad and intimate. It felt like we'd risen together in the air and evaporated somewhere else, safer, better. But in the back of my mind, I still remembered that I was an obstacle to Celian. That all of his professional issues could disappear if I stepped out of the picture. He could marry Lily, or at least stay engaged forever. He could save LBC. He could have everything he'd worked for many, many years, and still be the detached bastard who picked up strangers at bars to satisfy his physical cravings. Uncomplicated, straightforward, simple, just the way he liked it. That Sunday afternoon, I pushed the door to my apartment open and froze on the threshold, my heart dropping to the pit of my stomach. My suitcase fell to the floor with a thud. No. My father was sitting at the dining table, having what appeared to be a pleasant conversation with Milton over my favorite Manhattan donuts and cups of coffee. My ex-boyfriend laughed wholeheartedly and pushed something over the table, and that's when I noticed they were playing Scrabble. Fan-freaking-tastic.
"Oh, there you are." Milton clapped and swiveled his body toward me in his chair, his face glowing with a genuine smile.
He looked handsome, in a polo shirt and new haircut, but in a generic way. Not only did he not hold a candle to Celian, he didn't even hold a damp match. Not that beauty had anything to do with the fact that my room service breakfast was threatening to come up my throat for another puke fest. The other thing Milton ate Celian's dust at was being faithful, even when we weren't technically together. "Hello." I threw my keys into the ugly bowl Mrs. Hawthorne had given us by the front door, looking between them. Dad put his letters down and turned in his seat.
"Jojo, Milton told me all about your weekend in the Hamptons. You shouldn't have gone straight back to the office when you returned. You could have at least come back here and dropped the suitcase."
Milton grinned sadistically, arranging his letters on the board in front of him.
"Deceiver. D-E-C-E-I-V-E-R.
He spelled the word out loud. Goose pimples ran down my arms, making the little hairs stand on end.
"That's a good one," my father clapped. "Smart as a whip, son."
"Thank you, sir.
Baby, can I offer you a heart with a hole?
He grabbed a heart-shaped donut from the open white box on the table, motioning for me to take it. He referred to me as baby, even though I'd spent the weekend doing very grown-up things with someone else, and he knew it. Milton had also known when to come here, which set off the alarms in all of my internal systems. My mouth dried up. This is bad. It's okay. I really stuffed my mouth while I was on vacation. The smile on my lips felt like clay. I hadn't been planning to tell Dad about Celion when I came back anymore. After the disastrous conference call, I felt like I was walking on a tightrope, about to fall from grace and into the arms of heartbreak. I knew what would set my lover free of his father's claws, but it hurt like hell, the concept of letting him go so he could save the one thing he loved. But wasn't that the essence of caring for someone else? Hurting so they wouldn't have to?
Then, how about a walk?
Milton perked up like a doting grandmother.
The weather is nice. We haven't taken a stroll in your neighborhood in a while.
That's because you decided to screw your boss while I was busy running around Manhattan looking for a job. Whatever, getting him out of here wasn't a bad idea. I hitched a shoulder.
Sure, let me get freshened up.
After a quick bathroom stop, during which I stared in the mirror and promised myself I wasn't, in fact, going to throttle my ex-boyfriend, I walked out and kissed my father goodbye. I'll be back in a few minutes, I assured him. I, not we. The devil was in the details, and I hoped my own mini-Satan overheard it while he waved goodbye to my father. Milton and I stepped out of the building and took a right turn toward the main road, as we had many times before. I waited for him to talk, because I wasn't entirely sure of the extent of his knowledge about my love life.
You're welcome for that save,
he jerked his thumb behind his shoulder. I pretended to wipe my forehead.
Thanks, Captain Save-A-Bitch. Would you like me to sew you a costume? What's your superpower, dicking your way up the company ladder?
He knocked his shoulder against mine, smiling.
That's rich, from a girl who was about to lose her house 5 minutes ago and miraculously found a man to pay her debt in exchange for sexual favors.
How the hell did he know? I choked on my saliva, coughing as he continued to saunter beside me.
The heart is a lonely hunter, he said, plucking a wad of leaves from the trees bowing over us.
I cringed. I hated when he did that. It was a big fuck you to nature.
Your dad told me all about the book. It makes sense now, Jude, that you thought it was your destiny, that you didn't let me in. You were the sweetest, warmest girlfriend I've ever had, but there was always something off about us. I always craved you a little more than you wanted me, and it always drove me crazy. Elise was... Elise. She made me feel like a big fucking deal, you know? Smart, funny, young, all the things that didn't exactly impress you. Suddenly I was resentful that you weren't the person to tell me all those things.
I'm sorry you felt that way, but this sounds a lot like an excuse, and cheating is not something you resort to. It's something you decide to do. I kicked a little stone on the sidewalk. Milton didn't look down to check the color of my chucks. He didn't care.
And that's why I'm here, he continued. To tell you I get it. I made a mistake, and I'm sorry, Jude. So, so sorry. But it's time for us to move on. Look. I know how having an affair with Celion Laurent must make you feel invincible. I've been there with Elise, too. It's powerful, right? Makes you think you're on top of your game. You're desired by a force of nature, an authority, and you get all the affirmation you need. But it's not real, baby. What you and I have, that's real. We sowed our oats, and now it's time to come back. To us.
I stopped in my tracks. He stilled beside me, slanting his head sideways, half smiling, half squinting at the sun.
Wait, who told you this?
My voice was a 2-full cup of coffee held by a fragile hand, spilling at the edges.
Jojo, it's not important.
You lost the right to deem what's important to me the day you stuck your dick in someone else. He frowned and took a step back, and when he blinked, his expression changed. It was like he saw for the first time who I really was, and he didn't like the view.
Are you kidding me here? This is what you're focusing on? After you came back from a weekend of fucking with your boss, the director of news at LBC, no less, not only am I willing to take you back, but I also cover for your ass and play Scrabble with your goddamn father? First of all, I raise my index finger. He is not my goddamn father. Just my father. My sweet, caring dad, and playing Scrabble with him is hardly a burden. Second of all, I pointed the same finger at him. Nobody asked you to cover for me. I haven't committed a crime. I just wanted to spare my dad the worry of knowing I broke up with you. And thirdly, I poked his chest, and he stumbled backward, his eyes widening in disbelief. This conversation is over unless you tell me how you know about my alleged relationship with my boss.
Between making dirty headlines, maybe Mr. Laurent should teach you that revealing sources is a big no-no in our industry.
Milton recovered, smirking devilishly. We don't make dirty headlines, I scowled.
You're about to.
Milton's ears pinked, as they did when adrenaline ran through him. Was he threatening me? He scrubbed his jaw, turned around, and punched the red brick fence post behind him.
Motherfucker, have you lost your mind, Jude? Celia Laurent is not your boyfriend. He's not even your friend. He is your well-heeled boss. And you, baby,
he shook his head, chuckling.
You're wearing chucks.
He'll marry the Davis girl like the entire elite society of New York expects him to. I'm offering you security. I can make you an honest woman.
I cheated, you cheated, let's call it even and move on.
I cheated? I bit my tongue so hard the metallic taste of blood rolled inside my mouth. Can I ask you for something, Milton? He leaned against the fence, his tense expression unknotting into a forgiving smile.
Baby, of course.
Stay away from me. And I do mean for good. Even if you hadn't cheated on me, which you did several times, I still wouldn't take you back. My relationship with Celia Laurent, if it even exists, is none of your business. Never will be. But just for the record, everything I did or didn't do with other people was well after I caught you giving your boss an item that's above your pay grade. And before you even think of threatening me by telling my father the truth, don't worry. I will tell him myself. Right now, in fact. As for the rest of the world, I don't care. This is not goodbye. This is bad bye. The bye that ends on a sour note with us cutting ties completely. I turned around and walked home, not bothering to look back and see his reaction. I walked in the door, and Dad was in the shower. The fact that he was feeling well enough to have one on his own without me in the house made butterflies stretch their wings inside my chest. I marched over to the Scrabble on the table, they were mid-game when we'd left, and changed the letters from deceiver to defiant, and smiled. That's more like it.
Celion. Life is full of surprises. There were good surprises, like finding out Jude's pussy tasted like honeydew and was tighter than my fist. There were also bad surprises, like finding my ex standing inside my apartment, my spare keys dangling from her fingers in triumph, completely naked. Again. I dropped my suitcase and cracked my neck, walking straight to the bar. Luckily, we'd broken things off before I'd had the chance to become a full-blown alcoholic. Lily certainly looked better behind the mist of hard liquor. Are you officially a nudist? I haven't seen you with clothes on in a while. I pondered, unbuttoning the first two buttons of my shirt.
You're funny.
She hissed in what I assumed was meant to be a seductive way. And you're naked. For a rich girl, you could sure use a new wardrobe. How did you get my keys? Part of me wanted to know, and the other dreaded killing the person who'd given them to her. Not that there was a long list to choose from. But if it was someone from the management, they could kiss their job goodbye.
Your father let me into your sister's apartment. She had a spare key, and when the concierge saw me with it, I told him we got back together.
Something dropped somewhere in the room, but fuck if I knew what it was. Maybe my heart. I heard the thud of it meeting the floor. Camille was the only person I'd let into my apartment freely, and her place was still standing vacant, because none of us had the guts to touch it. Lily had been inside it, moving things, taking things, breathing the same air Camille had. Anger bubbled beneath my skin and I clutched the glass so hard I heard it cracking softly. I stared down as small rivers of blood began paving their way inside my palm. What do you want?
I told your father about your affair with the little blonde bitch. He's really happy for you.
Betty is, and she's not a bitch. If you need a point of reference about who is, just look in the mirror. I'll ask again before I call security to escort your ass out of here butt naked. Why are you here?
I want us to get back together.